Like
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. My friend, how are you tonight?
Good, sir. Good. It's going to be back. We just about got this 3-2-1 and then go thing down.
Well, I guess it's on me, right? 3-2-1 go.
But,
and then...
No, but we've always been a little lethal weapony with it.
I guess you're right. Well, here we are, folks. We are back. Late night podcast episode, actually, after work. I had to do some work last night after class, so we had to postpone, but here we are nonetheless. For those of you who are tuning in internationally, thank you. And of course, domestically, I'm sure if you are a domestic listener and you like politics, you've tuned into quite a bit of what we'll talk about tonight, and that would be the Democratic debates. But as always, head over to modstate.com for more editorial pieces. And of course, engage us on any of the various places that you find us, whether that's Instagram, Twitter, or of course, podomatic.com, which is our hosting site for the podcast. So
we outlasted iTunes.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, we
think
have
about this. The iTunes went down. I didn't even notice until I happened to test the link, went down the site.
Yep.
You know, now it's divided into music, movies, and podcasts.
Exactly.
Shout out internationally, Forza Italia. Thank you for continuing to join us. Algeria, Australia, New Zealand. I'm sure I'm missing a few. Domestically, like I pointed out to you this last week, New Orleans has been up there, but how about Detroit City?
Yeah, Detroit City. Whoever's listening there, I thought everyone just thought I was a traitor and left. But whoever you are, let me know.
Thank you.
Do happen to know a few people there. So,
yeah.
But anyway, always exciting to see where people are listening from.
Thank you.
Yeah, indeed. So, well, without any more pontification,
or
narcissism, we will drive on. So here we go. This week, we had the first round of debates with the 1,000 candidates. And, you know, I'll be honest, I wasn't necessarily enthralled with. I mean, what are you supposed to do, right? It's hard to not, when you've got 20 plus candidates, to get them all some sort of airtime. It's just way too much. And I thought, you know,
I thought everybody to go for a viral moment is what that is.
Yeah. So I thought we might have learned in the 2017, 2016 rather, election cycle that, you know, even 10 plus candidates is too much. And everyone is going to be looking for their viral moment. And what I would have, and even when you've got, let's say, 90 minutes with 10 plus candidates, you do the math, and that's very little airtime, and people are going to get more airtime just by the nature of the questions. So
Rachel Maddow spoke more than all but three of the candidates. Uh-huh.
Yeah. There were some issues. Obviously, Andrew Yang came out and said that his mic had been silenced. And, you know, the problem with these, the amount of candidates that are there is probably a bit of an implicit bias moving into those debates as to who gets the airtime. And I'm not saying that, you know, if you really are polling well, do you get more airtime, or should you concede more, if you were a lesser candidate, concede more airtime to those folks? You know, it gets a competition up there.
Well, I ask you a question in return. The first debate, do you think it's cool? And this is not rhetorical. Do you think it's a coincidence that they opened up asking Senator Elizabeth Warren a question, and then they closed asking Senator Elizabeth Warren a question?
Well, I mean, it kind of speaks to my statement, right? And again,
that's what I mean.
Yeah, and I was impressed. I mean, moving ahead with just the amount of candidates on the stage.
She was sharp.
She was, absolutely. And there was a lot of other people that showed up, candidates that showed up in the debates. That
and
really
Beto needs to go home.
Need that, yeah, and so we had these.
Beto O'Rourke's done. You heard it here.
These sort of visionaries of the party really got trounced. And if it wasn't for someone like Biden, just the fact that he seems like the reasonable candidate in terms of bringing moderate Democrats in, you know, he would be done probably. He would have been Beto.
Well, and let's We'll get into it further, but I'll ask this. What exactly, given who was coming after him and the topic, was he supposed to do?
Yeah, well, let's supposed to fight back. Yeah, let's save. We can save that.
We'll pull back on that.
Yeah,
but
because
just leave that in the four.
Sure. So, again, I think that Castro was one that came out strong in the first debate, and
Elizabeth Warren
obviously did. I mean, Elizabeth Warren's not unlike Hillary in the terms of the amount of policy that she has, and for me,
she's much more likable.
Yeah, she really is. Regardless of some of the flaws that she had in terms of the way she characterized herself, she is smart. And
she comes off like a school teacher, though, that you can relate to. You're like, you know, she doesn't come off as preachy. She's not speaking down to anyone, but you can tell, yes, this woman is an embarrassment of riches in the good, in the best sense, in terms of knowledge.
100%. And you know, I think the other thing about her, so, and this is what worries me about a lot of these folks. Warren, I think, if you don't like her progressive policies, you don't like her. I think that what she speaks to, and I think a lot of these candidates in turn of, this is my take home for the sort of progressive movement or the left, huge left turns that the party's taking. I mean, what you're seeing right now, I'm kind of all over the place here, but I think what you're really seeing right now is, let's fast forward 10, 15 years, okay? This is where you can look back and say, where is our party in terms of progressive policies? Where did that really come to light? Where did we see that? And of course, you saw it in Bernie Sanders in 2016, but this is where the Democratic Party has really, I think you will see where they've really taken their turn.
And look where that got him.
Well, I mean, it hasn't gotten him anywhere bad necessarily. I think
didn't get him president.
No, and but that was then, right? So now here we are, 2020, 2019, and this is where you can see more candidates really coming on board for things he's preached for years, and that will be his legacy. The man will never be president, but it will be his legacy. I think it'll be sort of the Bernie Sanders bumper stickers that you see in 30 years.
They're going to have their support.
Yeah.
Senator Sanders and Senator Warren are going to have that dogged support to whenever they drop out of the race and possibly beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think this frames, because eventually, regardless of if it's four more years of Trump, there will be, I don't know that there will be another Republican Trump. I just don't think. I think it will probably go back to a more maybe moderate centrist type Republican, or just politician, if you will, which will make.
Do you think the country is capable of that?
I think I just don't know if there's a character like Donald Trump out there.
Is there a way back, though, from this caustic era? I know Joe Biden thinks there is.
I think there is, and I know this will be all over the place, but I think it just ties in with the debate itself and just the overall progressive movement. I think there is a way back, and I don't know that it's necessarily going to be civility XYZ. I really think that you have to see who the Trump character is. Name me one other person out there that has Trump characteristics, right? That is going to step up and fill that vacuum. Trump is an enigma. He is his own character. He is the right place, right time individual. I don't see another politician that can step up and act like Trump that looks genuine.
Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah. Oh, God. I don't think you see a politician step up to try to be like Trump that would look genuine. And Trump, the thing that played well for him was his fact that he looked genuine. He is genuinely Donald Trump.
Well, he is genuine.
So that I say, I think...
He's genuinely about himself.
I think you wind up seeing, yeah. I think you wind up seeing a move back toward... Because what is Donald Trump's... He just makes up whatever he wants to be. And where if a politician runs for that office again, they have less of the ability to sort of make up whoever they are.
Exactly what he said he would be.
Exactly. Now, the thing is, a politician who comes to take his spot... is probably just based on track record a little less beholden to be as wild and off the cuff as Donald Trump is. So anyway, I think getting back to the Democratic Party, I see that this is probably the cultural shift where these progressive viewpoints, until things like universal health care, things like student debt, et cetera, wind up resolving or there's some solution to it. And I was struck by a conversation I had with, I was in class actually, and I think is what's funny as you move up in degrees, higher education, and obviously this is not exclusive to higher education, but in circles where people are really charting their own course, they're making their own money. As I say, you start making more money, and then you realize a little bit how a little bit more conservative you become because you're not not a billionaire that's able to kind of throw money around.
You have something to conserve.
But you do have something that you would like to conserve because there's not a ton of it, and you'd like to conserve it. Start having a family, you'd like to conserve it. So there's little less.
Don't do it, Nate.
So don't worry. So
we
were talking in an ethics class about I think someone did a presentation on generation. What's that?
An ethics class.
Yeah.
What's in the class?
Well, it's philosophy, ethics, leadership, and ethics.
I kid, but nowadays it's like, how was that in a 10-hour session?
And what's it, Generation X or no, Generation Z? What's the generation behind millennials?
The one coming after millennials?
Yeah.
Z,
that's right. Obviously, you can see how well I paid attention. But they, you know, they're broadly talking about Generation Z and then younger millennials. And I brought up a point. Especially because, you know, there's obviously always talk about the youth and what they expect and potential entitlements. But I told them, you know, there's a lot of people that hate millennials and Generation Z because of this so-called entitlement. But you have to understand, in terms of patriotism, the way that they view America, it's through a very different lens. And I think it's unfair in some cases to attack the viewpoints and perspectives of Generation Z and younger millennials because of the perspective and lens through which they see America. Now, we'll just say probably 50 years old, 45, 40, 50, but even most definitely the baby boomer generation, the Fox News connoisseurs, really had a different America in which they were brought up in terms of their opportunity. And granted, they ran into things like inflation in the 80s and the 70s, oil crisis, et cetera. But in terms of the way that they could set them up for success, whether that was jobs that they could stay at for a lifetime. My dad stayed at one job up until he was 60 years old and the company was finally sold and made a good living. The other thing too was if you chose to go to university, it was cheaper and you weren't overloaded with debt. So there was a lot of opportunity that was quite different from the generation today where I'm pursuing higher education because I will be capped at some point with what I do. There's just no way to go higher. It's a lottery ticket in terms of the next tier of management or business that I can get into. And I'd rather not play that lottery ticket. So the only way forward is for higher education. And like most people, I can't finance that myself. There's just no way without drawing it out for 7 or 10 years. So the lens by which I even look at the world is different from the way my parents, my uncle, and a lot of my older generations that I know, the lens is just different. So when you look at the land of opportunity through the lens of a millennial versus like a baby boomer, it's just vastly different. And so that would make you a bit disillusioned with the things that may be going on in the United States.
I can relate.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that millennials aren't working harder than baby boomers were, or, you know, you could have work ethic that would be a little different or the way that they view the workplace, but the grind is different, and the grind will be different for Z. So that being said, that, you know, I brought that up and I said, so you can't really fault them by the way that they view the world versus the way, you view the world, because it is through the lens of opportunity. And this is why I say these are the folks, the millennials. This is Generation Z that's growing up that will latch on to these progressive policies because the opportunity has been different and it looks a little bit more jaded. And so this is where I think you do see the turning point in Democratic policy and platform moving forward.
That's a perfect place for me to interject this then. And that's the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, the long-term budget outlook that came out, I think it was Wednesday? It came out this week, okay? And the reason I think this is a perfect place to put this is because none of the platform outside of perhaps a Joe Biden or Mayor Pete that I see coming out of the DNC candidates is tied to any semblance of pragmatism, particularly as concerns fiscal politics. And this includes Congressman Ocasio-Cortez as well, because I know she's on the back of everybody's minds and on the front of many people's lips, okay? Interest costs, okay? The interest that we're paying on the national debt. As of right now, okay, we're not talking about Medicare for All, student loan forgiveness, any of these wonderful programs, these wonderful ideas, and I'm not insulting anything. I mean that genuinely. Some of these ideas are great, all right? Not including a massive infrastructure bill that we need, okay?
Yes.
The projected increase in federal borrowing, quote, would lead to significant higher interest costs, right? This is projected based on current spending levels. In the CBO, Congressional Budget Offices, I'm quoting here, baseline projections, net outlays for interest more than triple in relation to the size of the economy over the next three decades. And again, we're talking about interest on the national debt here. That's not in quotes, that's my brackets. Back to quotes, exceeding all discretionary spending by 2046. In the King's English, the interest we're paying on the national debt will surpass all of our budget outlay, everything that we as a Congress, as a people, say that we want to spend for the good of our people based on current programs. Nothing new, no Medicare for All, no infrastructure bill, no free college, no student loan forgiveness, as it is right now. Interest payments on our $23 trillion national debt will surpass any of our spending plans, any of our spending programs by 2046. Mm-hmm. That's 27 years from now.
Yeah. And now, I think, yeah, okay,
you go, take go that knowledge and you look at all these ideas, these wonderful spending programs, and you tell me where the sanity is.
Yeah, and I think we always do a good job when we're talking about fiscal and monetary policy to take it right to the top, and I don't think there's a fault in that in terms of, you know, who.
Well, the math doesn't lie.
No, I know, and I think that I don't have the greatest answer, but what I do know is that in order for these to work, and we're not talking about, when we talk about balancing the budget, we're not talking about paying off debt. Really what we're talking about is in the cycle to balance the budget, meaning if we propose to do a $4 billion or $4 trillion infrastructure plan.
Well, I'd like to take you back to what that was based on. Interest.
Yeah.
Now, we're not talking about paying on the principal.
No, I completely understand. And I guess where in more of a philosophical or stream of consciousness, maybe be the better way to put it, is where would we be, or where could we potentially be in that time if we aren't addressing current social issues, right? And look, I get the libertarian argument. Like, for example, free college. I really think the free college is basically the massive counterweight to the idea that it's an absolute nightmare, the amount of debt that people incur just to get a degree to make it forward. So,
well, there's no arguing that point.
Yeah, but maybe the goal would just be to figuring out how to reduce tuition. And look, I mean, in order for any of these programs to work, taxes need to increase. Now, I'm not, again, this is getting, because I really, it's not fear mongering. Like, what you're saying is correct. The math is right. And
you know what? The reason I bring that up is simply these programs are, I'm not poo-pooing any of them. However, you don't hear that. If I've missed it, please tell me. But coming along with the Medicare for All, student loan forgiveness, oh, and by the way, the latest one to rear its head, reparations, all of these ideas are wonderful, okay? But take each of those in kind. Medicare, college being subsidized for everyone, whatever way you want to label that, okay? And yeah. A massive infrastructure bill that we desperately need. All of those things haven't even been projected into the budget yet. That 27 years becomes a lot shorter.
Yeah. So I guess
taxes would have to go up a lot.
They would. And the one thing that I, you know, I'm not a libertarian. I think the idea that tax is theft is just a shitty argument to bring to the table.
Well, I'm not advocating libertarianism here.
No, absolutely. But I'm saying on the spectrums of where we, you know, where we would have to go with this. I mean, we would have to fund this somehow, or it just adds to the overall debt and increases our interest.
Don't care.
But I guess my thing is, there's enough social push to fix some of these problems that, you know, it's going to be an inevitability. And, you know, I would hope, I mean, obviously there's a few places we can start, and I think you and I both agree, and we don't have to go down this rabbit hole right
now. We're
going
to have to bring back the capital gains tax.
Holy shit. Do we have to actually bring back the capital gains tax? Like, you know, maybe not fund our DOD as much as we are for a start. But again, getting away from sort of this part of it, because I know we really wanted to focus on the debates. I appreciate that. I think that you find that there's a necessity to find solutions to a lot of these problems. You know, I think it's, but it overall, the point I brought up is I think this is the turning point for the party. And there's sort of a measuring contest in terms of who's more progressive. And I agree. I don't think that every single one of these programs is sustainable.
Bear in mind, again, all of those candidates that are espousing, they're seeking to out Bernie and out Elizabeth one another, because that's really who they're trying to overcome, are the two foremost progressives here. They're speaking to 15% of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Okay. So nominating such a candidate is a political mistake.
Well, yes. And so that would be the next direction we take this. And that is, though I, you know, there's a lot of things that I agree are problems that I don't necessarily agree with the solutions, or I'm on the fence about the solutions. The solution is taking those ideas and cultivating those ideas, but not nominating Elizabeth Warren for the Democratic nominee. The disaster would be nominating Bernie. The disaster would be nominating, well, those would the major progressives. They have good ideas. Elizabeth Warren has sound policy, but if the goal is to get rid of Donald Trump in 2020, this is not the direction, and politics moves slow.
If the idea is to put someone in office, and I'm not saying this isn't the goal of Democrats, but if the goal is to put someone in office, not, of course, to get there, you'd have to beat Donald Trump, but the goal is to put someone in office for the betterment of the country who's going to get things done, then tell me which progressive is not going to find the death knell for all of their ideas at the hands of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
Which one is going to be able to get around that?
Well, yeah. And,
and then, by the way, we have radical ideas like what FDR tried to do in fattening up the Supreme Court. Used to, we would win elections and have senators appoint new judges. Now it's okay, we're going to move the goalposts. I mean, it's like more and more radical, and this is what President Obama was referring to when he said it's a circular firing squad. And by the way, here's how much it's changed. In 2009, President Obama still felt that gay marriage was unconstitutional. May I remind everybody? So fast forward 10 years now, and if you remember, you and I were stationed in D.C. and Bethesda still, when Vice President Biden basically embarrassed the Obama administration into changing Don't Ask, Don't Tell via a television interview he did.
Yeah.
Okay, that's how much things have changed and how much of a moderate Barack Obama really was.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Barack Obama could win the nomination process here.
Yeah, it goes to show how things are definitely changing. And I do appreciate, if you will, not saying that I support it or not, but the direction that the Democratic Party is going, I think they're finally finding their footing, I suppose, whether or not it's a winnable footing or not.
Well, let me frame it this way. I think it's a great way to select your representative, or it's a great way for y'all to get rid of Cory Gardner if that's what you so choose.
Exactly.
Okay. Is it a metric by which you can nominate someone to defeat Donald John Trump next November?
Yes. And that ultimately,
they pull one way, get them in the booth with a decent economy, and they're going to think twice before they say, all right,
bring on the taxes.
Right.
Exactly.
Whatever. Massively.
Well, I mean, you just look to Colorado for that example. Colorado had a lot of ballot initiatives that were put on, put on the ballot, and a lot of them were tax increases for various different things. And, you know, a lot of them didn't pass because when you get in there and you start doing your estimates in your head about how much more you're going to be paying taxes in the state of Colorado, you're like, I don't have the income right now with how I'm living to be able to pay for those things, for that,
it's
for that extra.
It's not that affordable to live in Colorado to begin with.
No, not at all. So anyway, steering back to the debate itself, like I said, I think you brought the point. I think Beto O'Rourke, he needs to go run for the Senate. That's what he needs to do. I think he needs to go and use that momentum there.
All right, so we said winners and losers from night one.
Yeah, I think. I said Castro did really well, and really those are kind of my take on Warren did well as she would, and then second night, I think was definitely a little bit more feisty, and you know we're at half hour mark, so I think we can dive into, I was a bit surprised. The thing is, Biden really doesn't need to be at these debates, quite frankly. I don't think he does.
I don't know why he participated.
I think he's asking that question today. Why did I go? Why did I go? And I was talking again to some colleagues at work today, I work with primarily immigrant colleagues, so Filipino, African, so it's East and West African, and they're very engaged in politics, and I think it's awesome. It really is. They ask a lot of questions, and they give a lot of interesting insight from their lens, their perspective, and they had asked, or we were just talking about Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and I said, listen, this is my perspective, and so I'll say it on this podcast episode. Do I think Joe Biden is racist? No, I don't. Joe Biden is also a career long politician. And I don't think that there are things that I agreed with or sided with even 15 years ago in my short life that I was maybe misguided at the time, or it happened through the my decisions came through the lens of which, or dare I say, the optics of which I was perceiving the world. Did it make me homophobic, racist, or evil, or hating people? Like, no, it didn't. It was a decision that I made given at that time, and I think Biden was also in the unique situation to have to work in a political climate where there were actual segregationists in the Senate, or was it at the time? Where was he at the time? No, he was Senate, and he had, you have to partake in politics. You have to do these things. And his unfortunate situation was that he said he'd like to keep it up to the municipalities in terms of busing people in to integrate schools. And he thought it was sort of a losing proposition in terms of a fiscal policy. And Kamala Harris jumped on that and even managed to bring in her own personal experience from it. And Biden's response to it was, well, it just wasn't sound. He was defensive, and his best comeback to her was, look, you were a prosecutor. Just remember, I was a public defender. Like, you're mischaracterizing everything.
Which is a valid point.
Which is a completely valid point. I think it was the best comeback he could have come up with. Like, hold on.
It's like, okay, Kamala, let's get real. Excuse me, let's get real, Senator Harris. How many minorities did you put away under the Tough and Crime Bill?
Exactly. Had misguided policies to lock up, you know, single mothers, right, who couldn't get their 16-year-old boys to school.
Couldn't really respond, as you know, I alluded to earlier. He couldn't really, and how tough of a response was he supposed to give? I'm not saying Joe Biden's the guy. I'm not saying that he's a better candidate than Senator Harris. She is who I picked when we talked about this before as a breakout candidate. She helped me repudiate that sentiment last night. But I don't know what he was supposed to do other than I wouldn't have played this game. You're not required to do the debates. People forget that 1960 was the first time we had a televised one. They didn't have one again until Carter. You know, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have shown up.
Yeah.
And Senator Sanders didn't come off. He came off as loud.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing about Biden, too, is now he has to go to the debates. He has to. Because he has no choice now. And look, I'll be honest with you before we kind of talk about the other candidates. Progressives most definitely don't really like Kamala Harris. They're torn, though. There's a hypocrisy, right? She is a woman. She's an African-American female, yet she was a top cop. So what do you like?
She's married to a white man.
Yeah. So where do you like more? What do you hate less sort of thing? But I will say, if you can put down your, your bias or your identity politics, or the fact that she was a top cop, whatever the deal was.
No, I can, but can she,
exactly.
Progressives.
And if she brings some progressive ideals and you can look past a bit of her history, because every politician and everyone's going to have history, you're never going to find the perfect candidate. That woman right there will excoriate Donald Trump. She's a prosecutor. I mean, she's quick-witted. She could easily, there's nothing Donald Trump can really say to her because A, he's the party of law and order. So they like cops, they like prosecutors, they should. So they can't really get at her that way. And the next thing he's had no problem going after females, but it becomes a sensitive issue as African-American female. I don't know how he really could go after her the way he's gone after Lion. I'd be curious to see how he would do it. It'd be a lot easier to do it with Biden than it sure would be with Kamala Harris. So if your goal is to get rid of Trump, you might not like her, but she is definitely the better candidate, the better pick than Warren. And again, there's a lot of voters out there that don't really look that much further past, you know, characteristics that they can see, or well, he talks well, or he's articulate.
She was my dark horse from the beginning, and I feel even stronger about that now. I kind of go along with the popular sentiment of she's on the ticket either way.
Yeah, I think so.
If she wants
it. Yeah. So I think personally, I mean, her stock absolutely went up after this debate. Biden did drop, but that's no surprise.
She's a VP if she wants it.
Yeah, I think so. So anyway, I think that obviously really was the star of the second debate. There wasn't a whole lot more. I mean, Bernie did unfortunately come off as a little loud, and I mean, that is Bernie, but you know, I just don't see.
It wasn't a good platform upon which he could really clarify. He came off as repetitive. Something that Politico pointed out, though, that Jeff Greenfield pointed out that really bears keeping in the back of your mind is something that Delaney actually said. And he's a candidate that nobody's talking about outside of this, but a potential landmine he laid for a progressive nominee when he talked about the idea of doing away entirely with private health insurance, which, by the way, Klobuchar and Booker didn't take the bait and say they wanted to do away with private health insurance. Yeah. Well, Harris is one of those that did.
Well, she did, and then she clarified again that she's
right.
And in a grand prosecutorial fashion said, yeah. Oh, I thought they meant, would I be willing to give up my private health insurance?
Right.
Like, oh, so you misunderstood. She's like, yes,
right.
I misunderstood.
So you're going to look out for yourself, but not everybody else. But so here's something that Delaney said. That's my take on it, by the way. It's like, oh, so I see what you're getting at. We do have royalty in this country. But what Delaney said that's very – watch. This will be in an ads that Donald Trump runs against a progressive candidate.
100%.
He said He said, this is bad policy. If you go to every hospital in this country and you ask them one question, which is how would it have been for you last year if every one of your bills were paid at the Medicare rate? Every single hospital administrator said they would close. Now, this is a Democratic candidate. And the Medicare for All bill requires payments to stay at current Medicare rates. So to some extent, we're basically supporting a bill that will have every hospital close. And that's the end of that portion of the quote. And then he finished by saying, talking about his electrician father on union health insurance. He'd look at me and he'd say, good job, John, for getting health care for every American. But why are you taking my health care away? Mm-hmm. Those two quotes will be in ads.
Yeah. And here's the thing. The guy's not wrong. Obviously, there would have to be a massive overhaul, and you would have to bring up Medicare, Medicare rates. I'm painfully aware of those rates. I mean, my company could, if it switched to that and stayed at those rates, would precipitously lose.
But Delaney just created a huge headache. Yep.
Well, just like Biden created his own headache when he deferred his time.
Yeah, my time is up.
My time is up. It's like, dude, you could, like...
You couldn't have phrased that worse.
Holy
you
crap.
Just quit talking.
He
was trying to be a gentleman and not do what every other politician, every party does and talk over their time. But, dude, either phrase that differently or don't say anything. Because, I mean, he just created a soundbite. In fact, we talked about it before the show. Folks, you might hear it on our upcoming intro.
Yeah. So, and that's the other thing, the kind of wrap it up portion of this is how much the Trump campaign is looking at the sound bites, is looking at the ways that they can twist this into socialism. They can twist it, and they're going to.
First night didn't give them so much. Last night,
a lot.
Give them a lot.
Yeah, and the thing is, those sound bites, that's what's going to be pumped out, and whether it's, I mean, it's a lot of it will be mischaracterized, but there will be, I think you'll see, as we move towards 2020, especially when the primaries hit, and then beyond into next year, you will really start to see this socialism versus democracy push. I think that's really the direction we go here.
Just remember, again, the first night was a lot tamer, but last night, that was just the beginning and the gloves came off.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the ferocity once things get winnowed down? Because they're determined to winnow down this field a lot quicker, because the stipulations between X amount of donors and X amount of dollars, it drops from a or dollars or this amount of donors to a dollars and this amount of donors. That's going to narrow down the field very quickly. The Democrats are determined not to let it drag out as long as the GOP did. So this is about to get fierce very quickly.
Yeah.
So can you imagine the fodder? I mean, they're making ads for the president.
Yep.
Whether they realize it or not, the Democrats are helping him make ads. So, and it's only going to get more severe. So, this is going to be every bit of the meat that we had no idea we were jumping into this for.
Yeah, I agree.
The thunder's going to roll.
All right, so let's what is it? April or Jesus? It is June 28th.
What did you say about Jews?
June 28th.
Now it's the 29th here, but yeah, it's the
28th. Oh, yeah, right, you're right, yeah.
It's the 29th in New Orleans, it's the 28th in Denver.
Yes, you're right. Who do you think, and not who do you want, but if this whittles down fast, who do you think emerges?
Like right now?
Sure.
Right now, I mean, Biden is still the pragmatist choice.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
Right now.
Right now.
Okay, and Harris is his vice presidential nominee.
Not Warren. It's got to be.
Well, he's not going to go with somebody similar in age. And he also, Warren's too far left for Biden.
Fair. Fair enough.
If it's right now. Now, this, we're going to see. Biden has kind of postured himself as the candidate most fit to run against Trump. That's his whole point. And that he can out-Trump Trump. Well, we'll see about that, because Donald Trump would survive this. We've seen that. I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, that's, we just, and Biden could be a little rusty. You know, it's been a minute.
Maybe, but, he may be able to survive this.
But there is
maybe having a very different conversation in a month.
There is way more fodder for a Biden Trump for Trump against Biden than there is a Kamala Harris. I mean, that's just the bottom line, or a Cory Booker. I mean,
but that's
just
what
the
reality. I mean, though. Trump, I mean, how many things did he say along the way to the nomination that we were like, all right, he's done. He's done. He's done. No.
But these are, these are all, and I don't mean to bring race into this, but these are all white men. Like, there's nothing you can really say to any of these guys that anyone's going to get fired up about. That your average American who's on the fence would say, that was not a good look. Even Carly Fiore, like, ugh, it was gross. But still, it's kind of a place of privilege that you throw the kind of minority into the mix.
It would have to be something so incredibly brazenly racist or just out of control against white people for it to stand out. It would have to be something that a politician would never say. No, that's a good point.
You could pick Biden apart because he's got 1,000 years of political history. Whereas Kamala.
And that's why I wouldn't have shown up at the debates. Keep playing your game, Joe. Keep running as if you're already the nominee, which is what he was doing, and it was working. So that's the thing. That's where I'm saying this is an if. If it was today, yes, Biden is clearly, he's got the support. If it went to a second ballot, he'd have the superdelegates. We may be having a different conversation in 2 weeks. With Biden gone, this becomes a completely different question of does that 15% of the progressive wing prevail and a Senator Sanders or a Senator Warren takes it? I'm not seeing below one of those three, though, at this point.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing below Biden, Warren, or Sanders.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, and I'll stand by it. I still think if there is a fourth candidate to emerge and take the ticket, it's Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yep. Well, I couldn't concur with you anymore. I agree. As of right now. And I think we'll revisit this. Like this is the first time we've seen all the candidates together. They've had some chances to talk, and there's been some gloves off moments and
Roadhouse.
It's right. So, well, my friend, we're marching up on 45 minutes and I'm about to go to bed. So as always, it's an honor and privilege to do this with you. And this, this stuff is exciting and I'm glad that we can take some time to talk
about
it.
Great to be back. Thank you.
Indeed. So until next time,
au revoir.
We'll see you.